Proudly presented by Provident Payments, this is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit today with 92-year-old, soon-to-be 93-year-old, Leonard Blake of Whittier, California. Orphaned as a baby, adopted by a police officer who later walked out on the family, Leonard quit school at age 13. He found any job he could, even leaving his native Southern California to work in the Kaiser shipyards in Northern California in Richmond in the Bay Area. He tried multiple times to get into the Navy or the Marine Corps, denied each time because he was simply too young. Finally, at age 15, he made it into the U.S. Merchant Marine, even though 15 was too young for that duty as well. He spent some time on the SS John Constantine, becoming aware of the inherent danger of what he was doing. After all, one out of every 26 merchant mariners, nearly 4%, died during World War II. The second ship he served aboard was the SS Mary Ann Livermore. And what were your duties aboard the Livermore?
Yeah, the hot shell man on the 350 forward.
So if there were incoming aircraft?
Yeah, I was in my forecastle at the time the plane hit us, and the armor-piercing bomb came through below decks and killed the captain and the first mate and landed next to me and exploded.
Well, and even before that, had you guys dealt with kamikazes there at Okinawa?
Yeah, we were there for 20 days.
So,
and they'd come in every day. The kamikazes would come in and they'd be hitting the ships and skipping off the water when they'd blow them up.
So you'd seen all this with your own eyes.
Uh-huh.
Did you think it was going to happen to your ship?
Well, there was always that chance.
Mm-hmm.
And we always thought we got to our gun station as quickly as we could, you know. On this one, I was down in my forecastle. I heard the plane hit. Then the bomb, when it got to me, I was on my feet. I was headed for the door, and the bomb exploded about 10 feet away from me, I guess, and killed the kid next to me. Blew me through the door into the passageway and my head first into the bulkhead. This top of my head is like a road map where I hit the bulkhead. And I woke up in a passageway sitting there in a pool of blood. And I couldn't figure out what the heck happened. I thought I was dying. I started making promises. I said, if you let me live, I'll never, and I couldn't think of anything I'd ever done because I never smoked or drank. And I made the promise that I'd never smoke or drink. And I just went from there on.
And as you described that, how close the bomb landed to you, what happened to others who were there?
It killed a kid next to me, and 11 were killed from the bomb blast and from the plane hitting the topside. 11 dead, 7 were wounded.
And it sounds almost impossible that you did survive.
Yeah.
Did you lose consciousness?
When I hit the bulkhead, I was out, yeah. It blew me through there was an escape panel and the door panel, and I was just a few feet from the door and to get into the passageway so I could get to my gun station. When it blew me through it, well, I went head first right into the bulkhead on the other side, and it put me out. I woke up sitting there looking, and I was in a pool of blood, and my legs were hanging there.
Your pants had been blown off.
That's all I had. Didn't have a shirt on.
And so you're taking stock of your injuries.
Yeah, I was looking at them.
So your legs, you couldn't control, and the muscles were detached?
They were all torn up. The calf muscle was hanging out and jumping around and blew off a portion of this foot, my left foot. And then my right foot had a great big hole on the top of my foot, and my Achilles tendon was severed, and I had all wounds everywhere. I had one I had right here in my chest. And I remember reaching down. It was a piece of metal sticking in me here. And I reached down and I pulled it out and dropped it on the deck.
Right from the center of your chest?
Yeah.
And your eye socket was broken too?
Yeah. The socket on this side is busted here. And I don't know what was done on top because they didn't even pay any attention to my head when I got to the field hospital. When they took me off the ship, they put me in a longboat and took me over to another ship. And then put me back on the ship again, or on the longboat. And I was on the boat with the ensign that was in charge of the gun crew on my ship. And he was lying there next to me, and he was crying and apologizing. He says, I thought it was a kingfisher. And I ordered the gun crew not to fire. And I said, don't blame yourself for it. It's just something that could happen to everybody. But he was all upset about it.
Because he had thought this is an American plane.
Yeah.
But it turns out it's a Japanese kamikaze.
Yeah.
And your body is shattered.
Yeah, everything. I had wounds everywhere. They said I had so many wounds I couldn't close all of them.
And you must have lost a ton of blood.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. They were pumping blood into me all the time.
So what were you really thinking? As I try to put myself in your shoes, it's hard to imagine that you could see much of a future for yourself in that condition.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, you just think, oh, this is, you know, the end. But you just keep going.
And you mentioned that 11 of your shipmates were killed.
Yeah, and I made a promise to them. I promised them that I'd give them 10 years of my life, each one of them. I don't know how old I'd be, probably 110. But I keep thinking now, with this thing here, the way things are, and my heart's going on me and everything. And I look up and I see them. I said, you're keeping me here because I made that dumb promise when I was a kid.
Well, let me ask you about that, too. Because I've talked to a lot of veterans who made promises like that.
Yeah.
And some of them, it was something that came from a real deep-rooted place that they really believed someone was listening when they made that promise. And others, it was a desperate, plea to someone they weren't sure was there or not. Yeah. What about for you? Is that something that you really felt deeply someone was listening to you?
Yeah. I never believed in God or anything before. But all of a sudden, somebody was there. And I was thanking them for letting me live. And my promises I made.
And those guys who were killed?
Yeah.
How many of them did you know well?
Probably half of them. Some of the Navy kids were running around with them, and the kids in the Merchant Marine, I knew them. Bob Blake was one, and T.J. Garner was another. He was the one that was next to me. He was laying next to me on his bunk. I was sitting there in this pool of blood, and I looked over, and here comes Garner through the escape hatch. He's crawling through like this, and he's reaching out to me, and I'm thinking, I can't help him. And he was trying, just like asking for help. And I looked over at him, and he fell forward, and he had a hole in his back about that big.
6 inches or so.
Yeah, and he was dead. But
wow.
It's hard for a 16-year-old kid to go through that.
Boy, it seems impossible for a 16-year-old kid to go through that.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Bob Blake, and it sounds like there was a pretty special connection the two of you had.
Yeah, we were buddies, His mom and dad were, he was an only son, too. And so when I didn't have any place to go from the hospital because the little lady that was my mother at the time, she was being taken care of by relatives. So I had no place to go. And the Blakes took me in and were very, I didn't ask anybody for any help, the government or anybody. After that, when they kicked me out of the hospital, when I went out of the hospital, I had orders to go to a public health service hospital in Los Angeles at the federal building for treatment for my injuries. When I got in there, I was on a gurney. Two doctors walked up. I guess they were doctors. And one of them steps back and he says, I don't have any sympathy for these guys in the Merchant Marine. They're just a bunch of draft dodgers.
Wow.
But I found out later that there were two news reporters, Walter Winchell and another guy, Pegler was the guy's name, were spreading rumors about the Merchant Seamen that weren't true.
And here you'd lied about your age to get in because you wanted to serve.
Yeah.
Well, and so specifically with Blake, while we're on that topic, so Bob Blake, you two were very tight. His family took you in afterwards. But what happened to him that day aboard your ship?
He was killed.
Where was he when it
hit? He was on the gun watch. He was on the 20-millimeter up on topside, and the plane killed him.
And when did you find that out, what had happened to him?
Right afterwards.
Right after you were hurt?
Yeah, I was told by the doctor that, there was 11 that were killed on my ship.
What date was that this happened?
May 28th, 1945. And that's the date I was discharged from the Coast Guard. And then my discharge from the United States Maritime Service was in 1946.
So you're 16 years old.
Yeah.
By any realistic expectation, the injuries you suffered could have or should have been enough to kill you.
Yeah, they would have been.
Your best friend is killed.
Yeah.
And several other of the guys that you'd been spending time with are killed.
Yeah.
What does that do to a 16-year-old's heart and soul and mind?
you just dream about them every night, every day. I still, to this day, I still think of my shipmates. And they said I didn't want anything from the government at all, but they took the veteran status away from us and the GI Bill and everything. You didn't have anything. And in 1988, I found out that they did. They had rectified it, and they were veterans finally.
Yeah.
And I said, I don't, still don't want anything to do with them. And finally, my doctor, who was an old field surgeon, Frank Rogers, he was here in Whittier. And Frank and I used to sit around and shoot the breeze about everything, the war and whatever. And he finally talked me into going to the DAV or the VA and making a claim. That was in 1990-something. I finally gave in and went, you know, to the VA, and they were wanted me to take an examination. So I said, it's all right. They can look at me. I still had wounds that were open. I think two of them finally closed in 2010, and I sat on a table with my pants off, and this fellow walked in, and he didn't say anything. You know, most doctors will walk in. They'll say, I'm Dr. So-and-so. How you doing? And
yeah.
This guy didn't say anything. He just looked at me and had a pad in his hand. And he says, let me see your left leg, just like that. And I says, you want to look at my right leg, too? And he says, what for? I said, well, I got wounds there, too. And he looked at me and never touched me with a rowel or do anything to examine me at all. He just stood there 5 feet away from me. The VA gave me an award of zero. Your wounds weren't serious enough to warrant any compensation. And Frank Rogers got all bent out of shape when I told him. He wrote him letters and sent him pictures of my legs with the wounds that were still there. And next thing I know, well, I've got 40% disability rate. That's what I've got with the VA.
Uh-huh.
And every doctor that's ever examined me said you should have gotten 100% disability rating.
Well, it's hard for me to imagine anything less than 100% when we consider what happened to you.
Yeah.
May 28th of 45. And I'm wondering, as you're that 16-year-old, and you say you're making promises to God and all that, but can you help us understand how much pain you were in?
I don't know if I felt the pain.
You're in shock?
In shock, yeah.
But for 76 years since then,
I've been in pain ever since.
Every day?
Every day. Yeah, I've got pain that runs from my, just below my hips, down on my legs, down through my knees, down into my feet. And I always lay there with, you know, all that pain all the time.
And so after this kamikaze attack on your ship, you end up in the hospital, hospital in Okinawa, hospital on Guam, hospital in Hawaii. And at one point, the doctors said, we need to amputate. They wanted to take your legs.
That was in the field surgeon said that.
And you just said?
No. And I made him promise. He says, don't worry, we'll see what we can do, son. And I says, you swear to God that you won't take my legs off. He says, yeah. He said, let him put me to sleep. And they operated on me and closed the wounds, I guess, as best they could. And when I got to, I was on Guam, I think, transferred me to Guam, and a nurse noticed the top of my head was always packed with blood, and she washed my hair out and cut my hair and cleaned it up. But I've always had a headache ever since, you know, it's always had a tightness in my head.
And they told you at the time, you'll never walk again?
Yeah.
Was that something one person said or that a lot of people said over and over again?
Most every doctor that operated on me told me that.
How many surgeries did you have?
I think 9.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But they tell you, you're not in the armed forces anymore.
Yeah.
And so we're not going to take care of you.
Yeah, that's right. They kicked me out.
And, you know, another thing that comes to mind, and I want to be sensitive to what you've gone through, and if there's something you don't want to talk about, you know, please tell me.
Yeah.
But I've talked to so many veterans who've been wounded in ways that we can see and also in ways that we can't see.
Yeah.
And when you go through something that traumatic, something tells me you may relive that experience mentally in your mind.
Yeah, you do. You dream about those kids that got killed. And you never forget them. You say good morning to them every morning.
Is that something that still happens to you?
Yeah.
Wow.
Every day.
It's time for another break, but there's much more to come with 92-year-old Merchant Marine veteran Leonard Blake of Whittier, California. What did it mean to try to carry out that promise a 16-year-old made on May 28th, 1945? You know, that ship, the SS Mary Ann Livermore, had Navy personnel on board serving as an armed guard. The Navy sailors who were wounded that day received Purple Hearts. The merchant mariners who helped man some of the very same guns did not. You think it should stay that way? Well, we're going to hear some of Mr. Blake's thoughts about that when we come back. And if that's something you'd like to see happen, for him to get a Purple Heart, there is an online petition in support of that. I have it linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com. Also accessible there, as well as on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, are photos of the aftermath, some of the damage aboard the SS Mary Ann Livermore after that kamikaze attack. We're going to hear the rest of this resilient veteran story when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.